I got a hot masterclass podcast episode coming for you here on episode 526 with Ian Horowitz. But before we get to that, you know, one of the challenges I continue to hear from real estate investors across the board, whether you're a wholesaler, buy and hold, rehabber, you know, et cetera, is people want higher quality leads. People are always looking for more motivated seller leads so that they can convert them to deals and so they can ultimately make more money. And one of the tools out there that I don't think I've done it enough justice talking about it, a tool I wish I had when I first got started. When I first got started, it was direct mail, door knocking, and driving for dollars. Well, there's a tool out there called Deal Machine. If you guys head over to flipempire.com/dealmachine, you can actually get 15 free credits. Now, I've used this tool to build a small team of property finders that will go out. And what's really cool about this app is you download it on your smartphone and you go out there and you see a vacant property or you see a house that you're interested in connecting with the owner on. All you got to do is snap a picture of the house there from your smartphone. And with the click of a button, you can add them to a direct mail campaign. You can pull up their contact information and skip trace them on the spot. There's a built-in CRM so that you can keep track of all your leads. And what's interesting is, you know, I shared on some previous episodes that I recently put out a post inside of our private Ascend Facebook group about what are the most valuable tools that you use in your real estate investing business. And Deal Machine was one of the top three that came out there. So if you guys want to check it out, you can get 15 free Deal Machine credits. Go to flipempire.com/dealmachine. And if I can help you utilize this tool in any way, I'm very familiar with it. Just let me know. I'm happy to hop on a call with you if you go ahead and check it out through that link, flipempire.com/dealmachine. So with that being said, let's hop into today's masterclass with my good buddy, Ian Horowitz.
You're listening to Flip Empire, the show committed to helping real estate entrepreneurs who want to build their empire without sacrificing their life. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Ian, my man, it looks like we are live, brother. How you doing?
Good. What's up, brother? Bright and early. You got me live out here on Facebook on a Friday morning, first thing.
My dude, you should feel special because I don't know that I've ever interviewed somebody on a live at before 9 a.m. Eastern. So only for you, brother.
Well, I'm glad you got everybody to take a look at me first thing in the morning. I'm trying this new beard thing. I've been off injured from work, so trying to look like you. I'm still trying to figure out the whole beard thing first thing in the morning. So
you're rocking it well, brother. You're rocking it well. So this is a surprise pop-up Facebook Live here. You know, I was getting ready to hop on here to interview you for the podcast. And dude, you got a fascinating story, man. You and I have connected and have become friends over the last several months. And you're an impressive dude, man. And I want to keep it real on the podcast. So I don't want to just highlight how you've built this multi-asset empire, right? Especially while still being a full-time employee, a firefighter in Maryland. So, but I want to talk about a lot of the common challenges that entrepreneurs face. You know, sometimes it can be lonely. And I think I want to keep it real and I want to talk about some of the challenges you faced, maybe some of the quote unquote failures or lessons learned. There's a lot to get into on this episode. So why don't we kind of zoom out first? Normally we'd go into like an intro and a backstory, but I want to kind of hit the fast forward button to you got involved in real estate 2013. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep. 2013.
All right. So to this day, you're still a full-time firefighter, which I think it's important to note that at least from what you've shared with me, you genuinely love that job. I've heard you talk about the fact that it gives you a rush that nothing else can give you. And while doing so, you've acquired a multifamily portfolio. You have, what is it, 6 self-storage facilities?
Yeah, 6 storage facilities.
And then you have a single family rental portfolio, correct?
Yep. We have about 100 single family units that we own. We operate about 50 of them. And then we have about, I guess, in our multifamily portfolio, it's roughly just a little over 100 units. So we have quite a bit of holdings. And then we also have a large 80,000 square foot office building that we're in the process of redoing.
So I don't want to ask you such a general vague question like, how'd you do it? But I know that's the question bouncing around anybody watching this live or somebody that's going to listen to this on the podcast in the future. You know, there's people I talk to that have a full-time job. They have responsibilities. Obviously, you're the father of 2 beautiful girls. You're married. You have a family. You got responsibilities like anybody else. And yet, while still working a full-time job, you were able to acquire all these units and build this massive portfolio. So I'm going to violate my own rule And I want to kind of drill down into your mindset, dude. Like, how'd you do it while still having all these responsibilities?
You know, some of it is just like, I sometimes tell people that I'm out of my mind, right? Like, I was just like completely out of my mind and I did what I had to do. For those of you that don't know me, and I think this is why me and Alex are really good friends, is I'm an open book. I'll tell you guys anything. And honestly, 100% of it was out of need, right? Like, I got hired in the fire department in 2008, you know, to go backwards a little bit. By the end of 2010, we had lost our, you know, our pension was getting screwed with, our benefits. We were getting furloughed. Like, it was this whole mess. And then I'm sitting there thinking, like, how can I create a family, you know, like a lifestyle where my wife doesn't have to work? She can be home. How can I make money while I'm asleep at work? And I was just like, what do I got to do? And when I took that swing, don't get me wrong, like, I'm a high D for those personality, high D, high I. Like, I'll take action. Like, that's not the issue. It's really just like the mindset of like, I needed to do this and then I did it, right? And then after I did it, I was like, wow, we're actually kind of good at this. Like, let's just rinse and repeat and go and go and go. And then as you see that lifestyle to start to be able to be created, then you're like, oh, wow, like this all starts to work. And then it kind of becomes a snowball effect. You know, like me and Jason talk about it a lot on our podcast, the book, The Snowball Effect, like Warren Buffett. It's just like, once you got that momentum going and the ball is rolling, it's like, it's kind of hard to stop mentally for me. I actually have problems turning it off is really my biggest issue, because once you figure out what works, you can do it over and over and over again. And
yeah,
I don't want to lie to anyone and say, oh, super easy, just go do it and you won't have any. No, dude, it's a mental stress. Like, it's a war on your brain. Like, I've confided in Alex, I've confided in Steve, I've confided in a lot of people. It is all out war, right? Like, there's a lot of things that you're fighting. I had all the guys at work when I was doing Section 8 rentals that I was like, oh, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy houses. I'm going to do Section 8 rentals. And all the guys at work are just like, we work in this crap every day. I work in Baltimore City. I work in some of the worst neighborhoods. Everyone's like, you see the people we deal with. You really want to deal with this outside of work? I'm like, yeah, because I'm trying to create a lifestyle for my family, right? Like, yeah. I had a lot of negatives to get to where we are today. But you know what? If you want to do something, you get out there and do it. And I always tell people, like, when they're getting started, it's better to swing the bat. I'm not saying lose all your money, but get out there, swing the bat, do your thing, and learn while you earn, and yeah, rock and roll.
Yeah, 100%, Ian. And I think you're a doer. Obviously, you're an action taker. So many people talk about wanting a certain lifestyle, but much significantly less people actually do what it takes to go out there and make that a reality. There's too much people thinking about it, dreaming about it, but not actually putting in the work. And to your point, I'm glad you know, being an entrepreneur these days, because of social media and because of influencers, it's sexy, right? It's like, I was recently talking to a 14-year-old. When I was 14, I wanted to be a professional baseball player. Now you talk to a 14-year-old and they want to be an entrepreneur. They want to be on Shark Tank. It's sexy. It's glorified. But people don't talk about the struggles. They don't talk about the challenges. Like, they might hop on a Facebook Live and hear Ian Horowitz talk about how he's got hundreds of units and all these self-storage facilities and all this passive income, but they don't know that you've busted your ass for the last, what, 7-8 years, you know? Yep. And so you didn't just talk about it, but you created a plan of action and you actually put in the work. So talk about some of the sacrifices and some of the struggles. Like, obviously, as a full-time firefighter, you know, your schedule is a little unique, but you're still putting in hours. I mean, you still have responsibilities. You got a family. So what, talk about the journey and, you know, specifically, you've been able to do something that not a ton of people that I know have been able to do. We're in single family. You successfully crossed over to the commercial asset class and you still operate in both spaces. So talk a little bit about your journey and the sacrifice and how you were able to acquire properties in different asset classes.
I think that's the point that a lot of people don't talk about, right? Like, you jump on Facebook and you just read that Grant Cardone bought an asset for $70 million, but then the people before him 6 months ago just bought it for $48 million. And everyone's like, wow, that guy just made $20 million, right? Like, I'm sure there was a lot of, excuse me, headaches to get to there. And that's the same thing that happened with us working in the single family space, trying to build a management company, trying to run a construction company, trying to find funding. Oh my God, trying to find deals, right? Like, I joke all the time. I built Terry's beach house, right? Like, I joke about that all the time, but it's serious because it was like, there were so many stresses. Like, I was like, you know what? I could find deals from Terry and that's all that matters. And like, that was one stress off my books. There's a lot of things that go into it. And then forget, like, you got operations, then you start to grow. And then now you got employees, right? Like, one of the biggest things we had problems with is that my business partner and I, Dan, we'd be out driving around the beltway, right? There's a thing that runs around the city, you know, the highway, the beltway. and we would run around the city, and then we would get home, and then we would lock ourselves either in his house, or we would get back to each of our own respective houses at, you know, 7:30 at night, lock the doors to our offices, and then ignore our family, and then go through all of our books trying to reconcile it. Hopefully, you know, you're in Florida. I hope I can say this, but your audience hopefully resonates with me. But the night Donald Trump got elected, you know what me and Dan were doing until 3 o'clock in the morning? We were reconciling our books because we had screwed up our books from day one of our company. So from 2014 to 2016, we were in there rebuilding our books. Like, it was all this crazy stuff, because now you're dealing with accountants and tax stuff and all this other crap as you start to expand. And guess what? It never goes away. Like, I think a lot of people think it's like, oh, Ian hit success or Alex hit success, all these different people. No, dude, like, you still have problems. Nobody, I tell people all the time, nobody ever calls to say hi, right? Like, everybody calls because there's a problem. And it's the same thing. As we grow, it's not that your problems have gotten less hard. You know how to deal with them and navigate those situations. And if you pick my brain a little bit more, I'm sure some more will come out. But we were able to navigate from like day one. And I truly believe, for your audience, I don't know, I know there's people all over the place in there, but the beginner specifically, a lot of people are like, oh, you could just jump right into commercial, or you could just jump right into multifamily. There's a lot of good lessons that you learn in the single family world at a very small scale to minimize your risk. Like, the very first house I bought, I paid $25,000. I put $25,000 into it to get $1,200 rent, right? Like, that was a massive win. Yeah. And I mitigated a lot of my risk. And I think to take those steps to go through this journey, some of them are right of passage. Look, some people can get out there. They come from accounting, or they're lawyers, or they understand construction at a super high level. I'm not saying you can't go out and do those deals, but in the end, you want to mitigate your risk to what you're doing, because you are going to have these problems, these roadblocks that nobody wants to talk about.
I hear you, brother. And so for you, dude, like, because you, how many single family houses had you acquired before you even got involved in your first commercial project?
Yeah, so we had about 60 or 70. And actually, simultaneously, we were approached with a small little warehouse on the east side of Baltimore that we were able to get under owner financing. So that was a good one to get involved in. And then we had bought a 7-unit apartment building. You know what? You just jogged my memory. You lied. Those were the two like that really transitioned into us to get into more commercial assets. A 7-unit building, really liked what happened, but I actually forgot when we partnered up. When, you know, when we were looking for capital, everyone does what they got to do. And we had about, me and Dan had probably flipped about 30 or 40 houses at this point. We had an investor approach us, and I probably had about 10 rentals at that point on my own. And there was a property that was leased out to a publicly traded company, and the property was for sale, and I thought it was a good deal. So I called a friend of mine who was a commercial broker, and I said, hey man, I really like this deal. He's like, yeah, I think this is a good deal. So I actually say, we actually wound up buying one commercial property really early on, but didn't realize the benefits of what we had to where we are today. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Yeah. But dude, did you have any training, or did you have any knowledge on underwriting, you know, commercial properties? Because like, if I'm watching this, I'm thinking to myself, well, dude, bridge the gap for me. Like, how'd you get from having all these single family rentals to saying, hey, I'm going to take down this multifamily?
Yeah. So it's actually an interesting journey altogether, because like, I did both the same, right? Like, single family is much more easy. And, you know, even in 2013, YouTube wasn't a cool thing, right? Like, you still had to go to seminars and whatever else. I went to a quasi seminar. I met a dude. I got friendly with him. I was like, how does this work? Then I started understanding the single family space. And then whatever I learned, I went back and verified on BiggerPockets and talking to people and having groups to go out and talk to people. Well, the same thing happened with commercial real estate. When I had gotten involved, I didn't really know what was going on. So I got real friendly with a commercial broker. I just started picking his brain, right? Like, and as I started picking his brain, I was like, well, that makes sense. This doesn't make sense. Let me go online and verify this, and just do whatever I had to do. And then, you know, you start getting into conferences and some other things, and you start talking to people, and you're like, wow, this is the same stuff over and over and over again. This guy is right. He's not spewing me BS, or the stuff that he spewed BS to me. I'm like, okay, well, that guy said something completely different. And then three other people are telling me the same thing. For me, it's always been about networking. And then going back and verifying either through my own actions or verifying online or verifying through other people always worked out the best for me. Just being able to go and take action. Honestly, for me, it's 100% networking. That's where I get a lot of my information. Yeah. And then I guess common sense isn't so common, but I use what I believe to be common sense and try to figure out what's right, you know?
So. Yeah. I'm curious your opinion on this, because you have one school of thought where people say, hey, look, you got to be laser focused, right? Like the one thing, the book, the one thing, the pumpkin plan, you know, you got this thought process. And I think there's so much to be said for that, like laser focus on what it is you want, go after that. And then there's the other school of thought, or, you know, the camp that people come from where it's like, well, you know, should you have all your eggs in one basket versus diversifying a little bit? So I'm curious kind of your thought process, your mindset on going an inch wide and a mile deep on one thing, because I guarantee you, Ian, dude, there's people watching this or listening to this in the future that say, hey, I'm going to start with single family, but I ultimately want to end up in commercial. I want to end up in self-storage. I want to end up in multifamily. Like, you've been able to navigate those waters. What's your advice for people that are thinking, hey, I got to do this before I get to that?
I think when you first start, obviously my daughter's got some comments. If you guys hear some background noise, she's having a grand old time today, but it's not a big deal. But when I first started, I think when anyone first starts, whether it's wholesaling, lending, single family, you want to get into multifamily, you should be hyper-focused. We were hyper-focused on single family real estate. We were hyper-focused on flipping properties. Then we got hyper-focused on doing single family rentals. And you know what that did? That allowed us to build processes and systems. And now for us, we're hyper-focused on real estate as a whole asset class, and it allows us to be opportunistic, right? So while people might think sometimes I come off as a space cadet and I'm all over the place, to me, it's we have this machine and we're able to put the widget in the machine, right? Like for me, it's, hey man, I can go in here, I can underwrite. Sure, each different asset class has their own little thing, but I can go in here and underwrite the overall deal and have a good understanding. And I got that from being hyper-focused on single family real estate early on. And I think you were at that one conference, Alex, when I was like, I was telling Wagner, I was like, yeah, you know, storage seems cool and all, but like, I don't want to do the work. Like, I don't want to do the work to learn this new asset class to underwrite it, because I could underwrite single family like that. I could underwrite anything in Baltimore in 2 seconds. But again, that goes back to, if you're hyper-focused and what you're doing initially, it'll allow you, it gives you that good base to allow you to go and be a better athlete, a better investor, a better whatever long term, because you have such a good base. And I'm sure you've heard Jason, from who I do my show with. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a lender, but it's the same thing for him. Deals come in, deals go back out. And then when he has equity opportunities, he has such a good network of private capital that he's able to say, hey man, I'm investing in this deal. I can now raise equity for deals. It's the same thing, same way as you're a good wholesaler. Well, you could wholesale single family houses, or you were, or I know you're semi-retired from that space, but now you should be able to go out and wholesale whatever asset class you want. Or you've looked at so many deals, you can do so many more deals that other people would be afraid of.
Yeah. And I want to kind of link the two conversations we've had so far, because you talked about one of the things that I want to recognize you for, dude, is that like, you're an outgoing guy, like you got a magnetic personality, kind of larger than life type of dude. You network a lot. And, you know, you've built a deep, deep network. And, you know, you talk about like when you were having a conversation with Wagner, like, man, I don't want to learn this new asset class and this and that. But I think what people need to realize is that it's all about collaboration and working with the right people. You can grow so much more and go so much further by aligning yourself with the right people. And, you know, it's kind of like that idea of, I'd rather have 50% of a watermelon than 100% of a grape. And you've done a great job, dude, of not just networking, but aligning yourself with the right people. Talk about like some of the projects you're involved in now. Most of those, to my knowledge, anyways, correct me if I'm wrong, you don't have those 100%. Like, you have a partner in a lot of them, right?
Yeah. So for a long time, it was just me and Dan doing single family properties, and we would raise debt from investors, and, you know, off we would go. We would try to keep everything for ourselves. But as you get into bigger deals, there's more room for people to get involved. It's hard in the single family space, especially when you're dealing in $150,000 houses that are cash flowing $400 a month. There's not a lot of room for error. There's not a lot of room for people to make money. But as we started to grow, you know, and we tried partnering on a single family portfolio together, and, you know, I don't want to say it's one of my mistakes, but it's something that I learned a lot from. I got a crash course on how the big boys raise capital. And you know what? It's tough in the single family space to do that unless you're doing massive scale. But what I learned from that guy ultimately allowed us to do, we were able to flip a 10,000 square foot warehouse with a partner and bring him in as a capital partner. I'm able to do storage deals with partners at 50-50. You know, they bring the money, we run operations. One thing that me and Dan are very good at is we're good at operators. Like, that's our niche. And I think that's something else that people, whether you're getting involved in real estate or you're involved and you're looking to bring partnerships, is what's your strong suit, right? Like, my strong suit is operations or networking, right? Like, we're, if you're cool to talk about it, you know, we were working on a small deal together where we were able to, a third partner here brought us the deal and said, hey, you guys want to partner on this? And we're like, yeah, it just seems a little tight for all of us to be involved. And I think either you or someone else, the other guy, brought it up and was just like, hey, man, why don't we try to wholesale it? And I was like, yeah, I think I got a guy. We were able to wholesale it to a guy who's buying it as his first deal. And he's super ecstatic about it. But there's another thing. Had I not stayed in touch with Alex and John, like, I don't know if that deal would ever came across me, right? Like, if I didn't tell people what I love to do, nobody would even reach out to me to be like, hey, man, I know you love operations. Like, I know you love doing deals. Like, hey, man, you want to try to work on this together, right? And I think that's where some of it comes. Like, you wear your heart on your sleeve, right? Like, and I think that's what it comes down to. If you're not all in on real estate, like, I hear people all the time, I don't want to personally guarantee a loan. And I'm thinking, you don't want to personally guarantee a loan. I don't think you're all in. Like, I get it. I get some, you know, some of the people why they do it. Like, when you're first starting out, like, if you're not willing to put your shit on the line, like, let's go, dude. Like, and that's, it could be a downfall of mine, but I think it's a strong suit of like, listen, man, I'm all in. Like, I'm going to figure this out. I'm not trying to, you know, if I screw up, I'm going to figure this out. I'm willing to put my stuff on the line to get this figured out. And I think that's what goes a long way. And then when people see your enthusiasm, they start to reach out to you and they start to want to do deals. And then guess what? The way I look at it, the more deals I can look at, let's just say that deal didn't work out.
Yeah.
I got to look at that deal. I got to practice. I got to take a swing and say, hey guys, this is how I would lay it out. Would you guys want to do this deal together? You give me a suggestion. Guess what? Next time a deal comes up, the three of us can go, bam, we know this. This is a good deal. Let's go. We already know the structure. We don't even have to think about it.
So, dude, Ian, you're spot on, man. And there's so much to unpack there. But what I find is that it opens the doors and opportunities for more collaboration. Now we're in constant communication about, hey, let's focus in on this market and let's go deep, right? And I'm running a mailing campaign and you guys bring so many things to the table. And that, I don't know that that would have been possible, or we would have gotten to that deal had it not been for us investing in ourselves, networking, getting to a mastermind, right? Because you and I had known each other, but I feel like the relationship kind of went a step further by spending time together, hanging out at the fire pit, having intimate conversations, going to dinners, et cetera.
You missed the drink part. There was a drink involved in there somewhere.
There you go. Well, man, it's funny for me. I'm 54 days removed from having a drink, right?
Oh, yeah.
Having some cocktails by the fire pit. Fortunately, this time, you and your buddy Mike didn't knock one over and almost start like a fire hazard.
Yeah, we became famous for that one. But but that's where it happens, right? Like the masterminding, you know, everyone wants to go to the event and people go, like, oh, you know, my wife's always like, who are you going to hang out all night and drink? I'm like, well, it's not really about the drinks. It's about hanging out with people and connecting. Like, actually, I think the one night I wound up hanging out at the fire ring till like 1 o'clock in the morning with Brent Stratton, his wife, and this other guy, Nick. And we didn't talk about real estate. We just talked about life in general, right? And by talking about life, you know, Stratton's like, hey, man, I got this deal. Like, can you help me underwrite it? But we're actually like, we have a bond. It wasn't just some dude that I met at a conference, or like, I stay in touch with Nick Paul all the time. It's like, hey man, you got any deals? Like, what's going on? How can I help you? Yeah. Like, you know, now there's like a friendship, there's a bond.
Yeah.
And again, when you're like a genuine person, then people are, you know, they feel more apt to like ask you for help. And then when you ask for help, it's not that you're inserting yourself. It's like, hey man, do you ever think about doing this? And they're like, well, no. Hey, can I bring you in the deal? Can you help me with this or whatever it may be? Yeah. There's always opportunity there that allows you to grow. Like, I keep asking you about your deal, right? Like, you're working on a deal. Hey man, you need any help? And it's just, can I help you? Because I want to see you succeed. Because the more of us that all succeed together, the more opportunity there is for all of us.
That's such the right mindset. And I'm so, you've been, you know, you, aside from Mike Wagner and Ken Holmes, you, John Farling, like there's a handful of you guys that have been such a big part of my journey so far in the self-storage world. I remember it was, you know, pretty late at night, you know, you got a family, you got two girls, and you took time out of your evening to hop on a Zoom with me while I was in Mississippi to kind of run through the numbers on this facility that I'm in the process of getting under contract. Like, so it's just genuinely helping people, putting yourself out there, and then it just comes back to you, man. It's, I don't know if it's the law of reciprocation or everything else, but like when you're just a genuine person and you want to see people succeed and it's not coming from a place of jealousy or envy, man, so much opens up to you, right? So I want to definitely acknowledge you for that.
And you know, that like whole thing of like people like especially social media nowadays, right? Like, you can go on and you can instantly be jealous, or I want this, or I want that. You know, like, think about your friend, just think about like your group of friends, and someone came home and they're like, listen, man, I scored $1 million, or I scored this badass new deal, or I scored a new job, or a new girlfriend, or a new car, whatever it is, it doesn't matter, right? Like, ask yourself, like, are you jealous or are you genuinely happy? For me, it's always like, you know, if part of it was like, hey man, like, I got this deal, and it's like, hey, I got this deal, I'm working on it. I was like, yo, dude, that's badass. Yo, what about this, this, and this? Like, you ever think about this? Like, let's go. Like, I'm super excited. I'm not like jealous of him. I'm not like, damn, dude, Pardo's like, he's doing deals and I'm just getting left behind, you know, F that guy. No, it's like, yo, dude, that's badass. Tell me everything you did. I want to understand. And when people start telling you about deals, you start to pick stuff up too. Like, forget like even trying to figure out how to work together. It's like, right. Oh, dude, like, you're doing some super crazy acquisition that I wouldn't necessarily do it, but I would have a lot of reservations about it. But you're like, no, if I do this, this, and this, I'm covered. I don't have to worry about these legal aspects. Just me listening to you, let's just be honest here, like, you as a beginner doing this deal, I'm like, shit, I'm learning all this stuff from Pardo because he's doing some crazy ass deal because he has to, because that's how this guy wants to do it. And I'm like, wow, man, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I appreciate you sharing that perspective, man. I hadn't even thought about it from you, because here I am on the flip side, like, dude, I'm inspired by you and guys like you that you've gone out there and you've made it happen, dude. And you've built this, you know, you have over 100,000 square feet of storage, and you've done it in a pretty short amount of time. And so I think part of it that I want to share with people is, whatever you're doing, in my opinion, you got to humble yourself, and you can't approach business or life like a know-it-all, because nobody knows it all. And I came into the self-storage space very humble and saying, yeah, I got like the experience I have in the single family. That doesn't necessarily mean anything. Like, I don't know what I don't know. So like, I ask questions, I reach out to you and say, hey, dude, I don't know how this works. Like, walk me through this. I think when you humble yourself, people are much more open to want to help and want to kind of lift you up, at least if you're surrounding yourself with the right people. And so genuinely appreciate that.
And just real quick, like, you know, everyone might be like, well, you did that in a really short period of time. But again, it goes back to being hyper-focused early on in our careers that allows us to, that must be Steve trying to mess with me. but
probably.
You know, early on in our careers, we were hyper-focused, and then we have the machine, and you stick the widget in the machine and the widget comes out, just like during, and I'm not a Corona guy, but when the whole Corona thing's going on, Ford was able to take their manufacturing and make ventilators, right? Like, in a flip of a switch, because they understand manufacturing, they were able to produce a new product. It's the same thing inside of real estate. If you understand the ground rules and the overall idea of what you want to do inside your real estate career, you can make that turn left or right. You just need to figure out the new nuances.
Yep, definitely. Well, I want to kind of transition to, I want to talk about, there's a couple items before we hop off the show today. There's a couple things I definitely want to get into with you. I want to talk about raising capital now, because my experience in working with you on a few deals so far is that you have the uncanny ability, and it's because of your network and because of the relationships you've built, where, dude, I've seen you pick up the phone, make a call or send a text message, and you're like, 10 minutes later, you're sending a group text. You're like, yo, I got the money lined up. Like, let's go. You know, and you've put yourself in that position and you've built those relationships. So I want to talk about the people that don't have maybe that network or don't have access to private capital. I want to talk about that, but I want to kind of foreshadow for a second. I definitely also want to talk about, what are some of the challenges that you faced from a, I hate to use the word work-life balance, because I think that's overused. And the more mature I get and the more wisdom I acquire, I think we have seasons of balance, you know, or where you focus on one thing and you're balanced in that area. And then the pendulum swings. That's something I've talked to Steve Cavanaugh a lot about. So I want to reserve that for the end of the show. But for now, talk about big picture. Like, how do you think about raising capital? Because you and I have had conversations about making sure that we protect our investors. So talk about that, and then we'll kind of drill deeper.
Yeah. And this is, again, just life lessons of doing deals. Early on, it was like, we needed money. We asked friends and family. We leveraged everything we have. Then we got involved in a partnership, and the partner was a security. He was a securities attorney, right? Like, he would write big syndications for like Monex, you know, the guys that sell gold at night on TV after hours, right? Like, so I got a lesson in life there. What it comes down to is being able to protect your investors. But even before you can get to this capital raising thing, you need to understand what you're doing, right? Like, you can't raise capital, you can't do deals unless you've proved yourself in this journey, right? Because the people giving you capital, 9 times out of 10, honestly, they don't really give a shit about the underlying asset. And this isn't me being rude or me being cocky. This is 100% the truth. What it is they're trusting you and that you're the good person and that you're doing the right thing, that you're going to be a steward of their capital. And that's what it's about. And when it comes to securitizing their money, whether it's debt or equity, there's a lot of nuances that you could get into, but I highly strongly suggest you consult an attorney to protect your investors properly. But in the end, it is about doing the right thing by your investors. And that's what matters the most, 100%. If you, A, are going to be a steward of their capital, B, you can prove that you have a track record of doing the right thing. For me, going from when I did, whether it was my first single family deal or first commercial deal or first storage deal, we always invested our own capital first. And then it was like, hey, man, we did this. We did the full cycle. Follow us along. We can do this over and over and over again.
Right. Yeah. So, and dude, I think you're spot on. My mentality is always, and I know that you subscribe to this thinking as well, is you got to protect your investors' money even more so than your own money, because it's your reputation. It's the relationship. And for me, the relationship capital is so much more valuable than any amount of capital.
I'm waiting to get on this debate because there's going to be a big debt equity debate, I hope, one day. But yeah, the bigger deals you do, it's easier to tell the bank, I screwed up, take the deal back, and you can go about your merry way and not screw up your business, right?
Yeah.
But right. What you can't do is say, hey, investor, I lost your $1 million. Sorry, buddy, I'm out. Like, you're probably not going to do business again, right? Like, it's going to be a long uphill battle, or you're going to wind up on American Greed or whatever it is, right? Like, those are all things in the back of my mind that I don't want to end up on. And that's why we try to do the right thing. You know, it's always, okay, well, what would the investor do? So we were having a conversation actually Wednesday, one apartment building that we bought. The seller owner financed it to us because she was looking for some tax advantages and a few other things. And we brought investors into the deal, and we're coming up on a year. Rates are starting to talk about going up. I said, hey, Miss Judy, I said, no, you wanted us to hold the note for several years, but like, we're coming to a crossroad where we need to potentially refinance, because if rates tick up, I can't predict what it's going to look like in 2 years from now. She's like, so there's a few things here. She goes, well, why would you want to do that? And I started getting into this whole explanation of, number one, it was about cost savings. But number two, I said, I need to bring my investors in a full cycle here, right? Like, they put money out and I want to return it to them. And she's like, okay, I understand that, because she's a debt investor in another deal that we're doing. And I said, look, it's no different that if you were in the other deal that we're in together, that when I go to refinance you, it's not that I want your note to stop paying. It's because I want to refinance you, give you your capital back so you can do it again. And then out of this whole conversation, I mean, she owner financed us multi 7 figures on this apartment building. She goes, well, if you refinance me, I guess you're going to have to help me figure out what to do with my mom's X number of dollars. And I was like, well, okay. So there you go. Here I am going into a situation where I think I'm in trouble. I won't say I'm in trouble, but like, it's an uncomfortable conversation that I'm having. I want to refinance. I want to return our investors $1 million back. I want to return her, you know, $4 million back. And then at the end of the conversation, she goes, you know, basically we're doing the right thing. She goes, well, help me invest the $4 million, right? Like, that was just one conversation where I'm trying to resolve something for myself, but in the end, it's going to be multi-beneficial. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. I appreciate you sharing that story. Are you going out and asking for money, or do you go about planting seeds with people, letting them know what you do? Like, I'm kind of curious, because your network is so deep and you have access to capital from so many different places. How do people start to take some of your experiences and apply them in their own life so that they can have access to capital as well?
Yeah. So biggest thing is always document your journey. Terrible at it. I'm very haphazard. If you check us out on Equity Warehouse, Facebook, Instagram, wherever you find us, it's very haphazard. But what I'll do is, you know, wevideo.com, go out, film a few scenes. You know, we film what we're doing in West Virginia. We film our storage stuff. We film our multifamily stuff, do a property tour. I don't do it consistently enough, but tell people about what you're doing. Again, it goes back to wearing your heart on your sleeve. When people talk to you, well, what do you do for a living? I usually tell people, I'm a firefighter first. That gives me instant credibility. And then I tell them, hey, I invest in real estate too. They're like, oh my God, tell me about that. then you start to tell them like, holy crap. And next you know, you're in this conversation, and then they go and verify who you are online, right? Like that's the process. Like that's the opening. Little point, if someone says, I want to give you money on the first talk, you probably don't want to take money from them. And another thing is I learned from a very, very smart individual who's raised over $40 million and, you know, they have a hard money lending company, but very smart individuals. They told me for years, don't ever come from desperation, right? Like I can't tell you enough. And I didn't realize this till recently. It's never, hey, I need money to do this deal. You've given up all your control. As bad as you need that money, you always go, hey, this is the opportunity. Unfortunately, it's already fully subscribed, but on the next deal, I could potentially bring you in. And don't talk to that person. Don't offer them any deals for 7 days or 10 days or 30 days, whatever your runway is, and then go back to them and ask for money because they have all that time to think about it and go, God damn it, I missed that deal. I need to get in. I need to get into that deal. And then from there, if you do right by just a few people, one, you can just do right by one person, just do right. One deal with one person. They will tell all their friends and family, and you'll probably have enough money that you, I guarantee everybody watching this today, unless you were the biggest introvert that I don't know about, everybody has the availability inside of their first and second network right now, today. You have all the money you need. You don't need to do anything else.
100%, dude. So I just interviewed Jay Connor. He's an expert on private money. So I think it was episode 520 or 522. And he talked about that very thing is that like within our smartphones, if you just go down your contacts list, all the money you will ever need, I don't care who you are, is in your contacts. The question is, are you being intentional about planting seeds with people, letting them know what you do? You got to put yourself out there. You know, if you just want to stay in your cocoon behind your laptop from your home office and not really communicate with the outside world through social media or just by getting out there and networking, it's going to be challenging to grow because people just don't know what you do. You know, Grant Cardone, some of his stuff I really like, and then others that just doesn't jive with me. But like one of the things that when I went to his 10X Growth Con, I think it was a couple of years ago, he talked a lot about how money follows attention. And I never really thought about it from that perspective, but I was like, you want to know what? He's right. Now, you got to be you, you know? And so like, I'm not brash and cocky and all that, but like, you can still generate attention. This, what we're doing right now, has some eyeballs on it, right? And so like, you got to put yourself out there, let people know what you do. And then you got to do right by people. Always operate. I mean, I think it goes without saying, I hate to even throw it out there. Operate with integrity. And to your point, Ian, if you just do right by one or two people, obviously you got to continue that, right? But like, they'll be like your mouthpiece and they'll talk about, you know, how they're earning a higher rate of return on their money, because most people are just not taught how to earn more than 5-6% on their money, right?
Yeah. And up until I'd say last 2 years, our biggest investor was a fireman inside of our fire department who he bought a rental property. I helped him with it. And he said, this is not for me. I'll owner finance this deal to you. I have X number of dollars on the sideline. And his wife does very well. And they have a few a few hundred thousand bucks with us. And here's a guy, he's a fireman making 70 grand a year. I said, you don't know unless you ask. Some, all the people don't have lavish lifestyles. Some people are hoarders of money. And the other thing is, by me being genuine up front and helping my friend try to get into rental properties, because I thought it was such a good path for me to build wealth and build cash flow, he wanted to try it. And he realized very fast it wasn't for him. And he just wanted to be a lender. And to go to your other point, 100,000% stay true to yourself. If you're going to put stuff online, don't make it salesy. Don't make it look at me. Don't do any of that. Like what I do is just like real life documentary stuff. Like we put like 400 windows in our 76 unit apartment building and did 250 squares of roof. I went out there, took a shot. Hey man, I'm headed out to White House. Got down to White House, check out all the windows, look at all the renovations that are going on. This is what it looks like monetarily. Come back, jump on WeVideo. And I'm not very good with that crap, but literally all your videos, they connect with a little bit of editing. You can have a video done in about 45 minutes. And it's not that hard, but be genuine. I didn't go out there and say, oh, look at us. We own a 76-unit apartment building. Look at me. We're the best people out here. No, not at all. This is what we're doing real life. And then people will start to get attracted to that. Now we actually have people reaching out to us to say, hey, are you looking for more investors? And that's when it starts to become a little scary because you're getting outside of your network that you're used to dealing in. But again, 100%, just be true to yourself. Be true to your investors. Be true to what you're doing and wear your heart on your sleeve.
Yeah, so true. And two quick points I want to piggyback on is don't think about creating content. Think about documenting. I like that word that you use because creating content sounds overwhelming and how do I do this and that? Just document your journey and your process, right? And then don't be so tied to the outcome. Don't be so tied to, well, what if people don't respond? Or what if people think I look stupid? Like, who cares, right? Just do you. And that's easier said than done. Those are things that years in the past, I wouldn't have felt that way. And I've had to like work through those. But like, just put yourself out there. The right people are going to be attracted to you. And the ones that just don't like you or, you know, how you sound or look at me, I'm a Cuban accent. You know what I mean? It's like, this is me, man. So put yourself out there and the right people you're going to be attracted to and vice versa. So
it's hard, right? Like I got a bubby personality. Pardo's the outgoing guy. This stuff's hard, man, because you're on here, you're talking, you're like, oh, what if I say the wrong thing? What? Like, it's still hard for us to get on here and do these things. But you know what? You got to do it. Alex texted me, he's like, hey, man, I want to do a show with you. I'm like, yeah, done. Let's do it, right? Like, and in three texts, we figured out what time, what day, and this was done in 48 hours, right? But
yeah, right.
We're both outgoing personalities, but it's still tough for us to put ourselves out there. Dude, you're putting your business out here, but it's okay. I'm willing to do it. If I don't do this show, or if Alex... Christ, you've done 500 and something shows. I mean, that is impressive and consistent. But out of those 500 shows, you've met 500 cool people. You've talked about 500 badass topics that people are like, man, Alex is like really well-versed. I want to talk to Alex. How can I work with Alex?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that you brought that up because I wasn't planning on going here. And I know we got maybe 5-10 minutes left if you're good on time, Ian. But you have a podcast as well. It's called the Real Estate Reserve Show with Jason.
Yep. Yep.
Got it. So what kind of impact has you putting yourself out there, having a podcast, what has that done for your business?
Oh, that's 100% helped us grow. You know, between talking to people, interviewing people that we want to talk to, you know, sometimes you can't talk to that SEC attorney or you can't talk to that 1031 guy, but you get to interview him for the show and you learn all this knowledge and you provide value to your network. For Jason, he does hard money loans, so it produces hard money loans. For me, it builds credibility. So the next time we want to own or finance something, so next time we want to, you know, raise capital, it's like, hey, man, this is who I am. And then people, they don't tell you to your face, I don't believe you. They go home, they jump on the internet and they type in Ian Horowitz or they type in Alex Pardo and say, who the hell is this guy? And then their Facebook feed pulls up. It's like, okay, Equity Warehouse. Holy crap, there's 35 videos. Look at all these interviews he's doing. Okay, he's credible. How can I work with you?
Yep, 100%, dude. So here's how I want to kind of end the show. And I realize this could be a deep topic and maybe in the future, Ian, we can have you on for a part two if you're down for it. But man, I want to hear what are your biggest challenges right now? Because somebody's watching this and they're saying, man, this guy's got it. All these units, he's built this real estate empire, you know, he's in a job that he loves. But like you said, man, it's not always, you know, it's not always unicorns and rainbows and like shit gets real sometimes and it gets challenging. You know, so talk about like for you, what are some of your biggest struggles and challenges growing the business? And let's wrap in the family component as well, because I know those are conversations you and I have had and you're an open book, so I don't mind asking you.
Yeah. You see back there, I went to a mastermind recently and some of my topics are on there. And you're saying like, what's your struggles in business? You know, business, it's a day-to-day thing, right? Like, you know, you're going to have your instant fires that you need to put out. Luckily, we have a good team. And a lot of stuff gets handled. So on the business side of things, I'm always looking how to increase revenue, increase collections, increase our bottom line. That those are my main challenges right now. I don't want to say we're in a really good spot in our business life. What it comes down to, and it's been a topic that's come up, you know, you talk about seasons. My season right now is struggling with, I broke my foot at work, right? I love my job. I'm kind of getting to the point where it's like, well, real estate's overtaking my fire department job. I'm having this struggle there of like, do I go back to work since I broke my foot? I don't want to say I struggle with is we put it all out, right? Like we're all in 24/7. And that's not just at work. It's with your family too. Sometimes you get home, you know, I still go out there. If we have service calls, I'll put my hand in a sewer drain and try to figure out what the hell's going wrong. Or I'll go still go meet contractors if my project manager is overwhelmed. And you know, we pick up all this crap and then you get home and I have a 6 and 2 year old and 6 and 2 year olds are going through things and you expect them to be mature 24/7, but they're 6 and 2. And it's like, you get home, you got to keep it together, right? Or you need that dedicated family time. Yesterday, I enjoyed it. I should have been at the fire department, but instead I was at Cabela's with my daughter, right? Like that was cool to have that work-life balance that I'm starting to see. And that's where there's a lot of struggle. A lot of people, they don't want to talk about it. They're like, oh, well, that's my business life and this is my family life. No, dude, like if you're an entrepreneur, really anybody in general, your business and personal life are integrated. They're one cohesive unit. And a lot of people don't want to talk about that. So the shit that goes on at home, causes problems at work, and the problems at work cause problems at home. And a lot of people don't want to talk about it. And as I've gotten, I don't know if my kids have gotten older or we've doing more business, or maybe with all this gray in my beard, I'm getting more mature, but you know, you start to see these things and it starts to resonate with you and you're like, okay, well, how can I fix these things? And, you know, without groups, you know, Terry's done a little vacation mastermind. Steve's been up my butt. I think that word is send over here on the right that I keep staring at. But, you know, groups like that, you know, dude, other people have these problems. Nobody wants to talk about it. I'll tell the whole damn internet, you know what I mean? But nobody wants to talk about it. Grant Cardone don't want to talk about if he's having a fight with his wife, right? Like Gary Vee's not talking. I'm on the road, you know, 900 days a year. How does that affect his family life? All people see is Gary Vee's doing work and he's making money. He's flying on private jets. He wants to buy the jets. No, dude, I'm sure that takes a toll on his family life, right? Like, so that's kind of where I'm at mentally. And there you go. I'm a complete open book. I'm not shy.
Yeah. Well, again, man, I'm grateful that you're putting it out there, because I think with any challenges, whatever the challenge is, whether it's health, business, finances, personal relationships, there's got to be a sense of awareness about it that, hey, this is something I don't have figured out. And it's by opening up, it's by being transparent that I think it's just by being transparent and saying, hey, look, I don't have this figured out, but having these conversations, you know, and drawing from people's experiences, like, dude, you and I don't have everything figured out. I got just as many challenges as the next guy, right? And it's just about growth. It's about understanding that we're always a work in progress. And my mindset, dude, when I wake up is, how can I be better today than I was yesterday? And then before I put my head on my pillow, how can I be better tomorrow than I was today? And sometimes I fail. Oftentimes I fail and I screw up and I do the wrong thing or say the wrong thing. But it's just about that awareness and just having these types of conversations, I think, really helps me.
Yeah. And I know we got to go, but something that's always resonated with me, and I want to point something out back here, is that I always say, if it's good for me, it's good for my business, because most of us put our business first and then put our life second.
Yeah.
That's why I always say, if it's good for me, it's good for my business. So if I want to take a personal day, guess what? It's going to make my business better because it allows it to breathe. And his last mastermind I went to, one of the takeaways that I got, it's the very top line with my chicken scratches, be intentional with our time, our money, our health, and our lifestyle. And if you can be intentional with all those things, I think it goes a long way. And I'm not saying I got it figured out. I struggle with it every day. It's tough, man, being intentional with your money. There's so much stuff. You know, your wife's on Amazon every day. Is that being intentional? We don't know. Being intentional with your lifestyle, right? Like, oh, I want to go do business. I want to go do business because it's going to make my lifestyle better. But you're sacrificing to do one thing, being intentional with our time or your health. Like, dude, those are legit things. And if I could leave your audience with that, hopefully it resonates with them too.
My man, this is a long overdue. I appreciate you within a text message saying, heck yes, I'm in, dude, let's do it. And then a couple of days later, you're on, man. So talk a little bit about where people can connect with you. What are you looking for? I know you obviously are a relationships guy, so you're an open book, like you've said several times. So talk a little bit about, you know, what you're looking for and how people can connect with you.
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook or Instagram, Equity Warehouse, or Ian Horowitz, or just email ian@equitywarehouse.com. I'm pretty open. You got any questions, capital, deal structure? That's really what I like to do. Happy to help anybody. What we're looking for, we're opportunistic in the Baltimore market for commercial multifamily, shied away from single family. And then nationwide, always looking for storage deals, which I'm sure since this is Alex's show, I'll steal all the good deals. But if there's anything left for me, let me know. But in the end, you guys need anything, you know where to find me. We did write a book. It's on Amazon. It's called Subsidized, about doing subsidized single family rentals, if you want to check that out. And Alex, man, I appreciate you. Hopefully your audience enjoyed it. And I look forward to the next one, panel interview, whatever you want to do. I'm here, man. I'm excited and always happy to put myself out there.
Yeah, no, thanks so much, dude. I'm grateful for the friendship and for you hopping on here. And at some point soon, just keep an eye out. I will be hosting another debate. We're going to be talking about debt versus equity, you know, free and clear versus leverage and all that good stuff. And I know my man Ian will be a part of that because he's got some strong feelings and it should make for an interesting debate. So with that said, guys, I want to encourage you, make sure you're subscribed to the Flip Empire Show so you get notified every Monday and Thursday. Every now and then I'll do some of these pop-up lives because I've gotten some pretty good feedback on it. And make sure you check out the last episode I just released yesterday because I think you'd get a lot out of it. So with that said, appreciate you guys tuning in. For those of you who are on the Facebook Live and who commented, we genuinely appreciate you guys. And for those on the podcast, thank you for giving us your time. Hopefully we over-delivered for you. So my man, I appreciate you. I know we'll probably be on a call here coming up here soon, but Thank you for being a part of my journey and for the friendship, brother.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Thanks.
Have a great one, guys. All right, my friend, I hope you enjoyed that Flip Empire episode and got a lot of value out of it. Make sure to check the show notes page for any resources that were mentioned. And speaking of resources, honestly, I don't think I've done the best job of sharing with you my top curated, highly recommended tools and resources that I use in my business or have used in my business. In some cases, these are affiliate relationships with people that I highly trust and respect, and I know these tools and resources can help you and your business go to the next level. And as an ethical bribe, if you decide to try out one of these resources using my link, I will go ahead and send you an unadvertised bonus. I'll send you something of high value. All you got to do is shoot me an email, alex@flipempire.com. Go ahead and let me know that you tried out this resource, and however I can help you getting started with that, chances are that I know it very, very well and currently use it or have used it. So make sure to check that out, flipempire.com/resources. And if I can be of help or service to you in any way, just shoot me an email, alex@flipempire.com, and I will do anything I can for you. Have an amazing day, and I'll catch you on the next show.